This is Inside Wealth, the ultimate disclosure on Talk 910 KNEW. Living a healthy and happy life is about awakening the matters of your wallet, balanced by concerns of your heart. Now, Stu Zimmerman.
Hello, 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 everybody, and welcome back to Inside Wealth. What a joy to be here, and in fact, as you know by now, that is what Inside Wealth is all about. It's about a joy for living. It's not just about our money, but to the extent we look at money, and let's face it, you know, it buys some great things in life, even beyond our survival mode. We take a look at how we can create money in our own lives by being the best of who we are, by taking out digging deep. And accessing all these values and virtues of the best of who we are as human beings and bring them out into the world, even to create financial wealth. Even if there are people out there who do things differently, you know, we get to actually live in our own skin and bones and settle for nothing less than the best of who we are as human beings. And that is what Inside Wealth is all about. And to that extent, we've got a great guest today, Matt Emmons, the CEO of Shire Pharmaceuticals, who also co-authored a fantastic book that I read called Zenobia. It's a curious book, by its own admission, because the subtitle is The Curious Book of Business, a tale of triumph over yes-men, cynics, hedgers, and other corporate killjoys. So when you're talking about killjoys, we know that is actually the underbelly of Inside Wealth, because we're not talking about killjoy, we're talking about living joy. So we have Matt on the program. We'll talk about his book and also how he walks his talk with Shire Pharmaceuticals, because it's more than just words these days, don't you know? Especially as we're in this political campaign where there are a lot of words being tossed around a lot, and it really comes down to what do people do? What decisions do they make and what actions do they take? It's that simple. We also have with us our valued Brain Trust member, Kevin Grauman, joining us, who is one of the members, the attendees of this kind of closed circle called the TED Conference. Maybe you've heard of it. It takes place annually in Monterey. TED stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design. And it's a who's who of technologists, you know, people like Sergey Brin and Larry Page of Google, the founders of Google. Entertainers, Cameron Diaz was there. Meg Ryan has been there in the past. Robin Williams was there. And design. And together, they bring the brightest minds in the world together. And they share their thoughts, and it's amazing how many people actually open the learning, no matter how many millions, and in some cases, billions, they have in their pockets. So we'll hear from Kevin, the insider's view of what went on at the TED conference from his humble perspective. But before we get to Matt and Kevin, you get this week's heaping helping, what we call affectionately as our bowl of stew. Well, this week's bowl of stew, we're mixing it up pretty good. In fact, it's actually inspired by the book Zenobia and its co-author, Matt Emmons, who will be visiting us with us very shortly. And specifically, I couldn't help but notice, you know, it has some amazing topics and subject titles for each chapter. And as I started to get to the end of the book, something really profoundly affected me. And I'm actually thumbing through the pages right now to see exactly how profound I was affected, because one of the things, as you may realize, and maybe it's in your life too, I'm not sure how old you are, but isn't your to-do list rather high these days? What'd you have for lunch yesterday? I don't know. Exactly my point. You know what I mean? So anyway, that's why I was having a bit of a minor senior moment here. But the title is called Yield Nothing to Those Who Can't See Past Themselves. Let me state that one again. Yield nothing to those who can't see past themselves. Because I got to tell you, in case you couldn't guess, well, I will tell you, because I won't even have you guess. What we are doing right now, what I personally am doing beyond this radio show, is its parent company is called Enjoy Media Inc., okay? And we are taking this radio show into a video format called Inner Espresso. Yummy. Here you get the bowl of stew, there you get the inner espresso, okay? And it's really about, as one would think, it's about waking us up on the inside. And it's also about having a little bit, packing a big wallop. So here we are, and this is designed to actually be introduced into corporate America to create this vibrant corporate culture and more fully engage people at work. Because how many people do you know, and maybe you're one of them, that you actually view work as a necessary evil? Well, you go through work every day, you know you need the money, you know you need the coin, and you go through it, and maybe you don't quite give it your best. Maybe you don't quite give it your all. Maybe you're really frustrated with the structure of it all and the impersonality of it all, where you have the corporate executives somewhere behind that that curtain or that corporate veil somewhere. They're kind of hiding out, being a little inanimate, and possibly not completely living the mission or the value statement or the vision statement of the company. Maybe, you know, a lot of people have that experience, and maybe you are one of them. Okay. In fact, that's one of the things this book addresses with Zenobia is just that, but we'll get into that. But the thing is this, is as we talk about, as that one particular title of that chapter, yield nothing to those who can't see past themselves. I want to tell you how I've been applying that in my own life, and as we're taking this Enjoy Media and looking at this Inner Espresso as really being our financial engine. Because, you know, in case you couldn't guess by now, I'll speak for myself, I have a vision for the world that is so far different than what you see in the newspapers, what you see in People magazine, and the way most of us view life and just say, you know, that's the way it is. You want me to be specific? I'll be specific. I see the world as an absolute playground, and that if each of us were to really live our truths and go beyond all these stories that we were born into, whether it's the political structures, the economic structures, the religious structures, whatever it is that separates us, I think deep down we all know that we're all human beings, that we're all here on the planet at the same time. And I think we could all raise our hands and say, what is the greatest feeling out there in the whole world? It's love. That is the greatest feeling in the whole world. Now, guys, you may be thinking something else right now, but you know what I'm talking about. It really is at its heart. It's that feeling inside of our body that just feels so amazing. So amazing. And I think we all know on a profound level that all of us are just human beings, whether we're in Africa, China, you know, Jewish, Muslim, we're all human beings. And I know that on a profound level, if each of us were to take all of our stories and all the history and just for a moment, check it at the door, just leave it out there somewhere so we could be here right now, present in this moment, I think each of us would confess on a deep level that if we had the power, the creative juice, to change this world and create a world we wanted to live in, it would be a lot more playful, a lot more laughter, a lot more fun, a lot more abundance for a lot more people. And all this thing called poverty and hunger and scarcity mentality and lying and cheating and stealing, all these things would not exist. Now, I know we've been taught that's part of the human condition. And clearly, what Enjoy Media is here to do is help to bust those myths and bust those structures so truly we can live a life of more moments in joy, which means that we're going to have moments of anger and struggle, possibly, and disappointment and sadness, and that is part of the human experience. Because, you know, when we talk about joy, if each of us were in this state of joy in every moment, some of us would say that feels like heaven, and some of us would say, sounds like you're dead, because it would be that high hum as opposed to having the full experience of what this world has to offer us. And sometimes it does have challenge, and sometimes it does have disappointment, which of course gives us even greater opportunity to appreciate the moments when we're not struggling. And so we're talking about yielding nothing, to those who can't get past themselves. How we're applying that in our business here is saying, you know what? I know we're all in this together. We're here to be of service. How can we be of greatest service, knowing full well there's enough money to go around for everybody? And as we're seeing past the people who can't get past themselves in the fear of scarcity and needing to have exclusive relationships or needing to define things in a certain way that help to maximize their own and possibly minimize or limit the potential impact that we could be having either together or even separately. It's an opportunity to see past it and yield nothing and stay committed to what we know in our hearts is true, which is that love is the highest standard. We're here to have maximum impact, to create the kind of world we want to live in. And to do that requires a very strong financial engine and truly being of service and walking that talk. And all I can tell you is stay tuned, people, because the yeses that we're getting are from amazing corporations who've been around and business people who've been around a very long time with a lot of zeros in their bank account, and they're getting it, and they want to get more of it, and it's a beautiful thing. So here it is, people. Yield nothing to those who can't see past themselves. And specifically, go into your heart and really figure out for yourself what is true and settle for nothing less. With that, we have Matt Emmons, the CEO of Shire Pharmaceuticals and co-author of this wonderful book, Zenobia, The Curious Book of Business, A Tale of Triumph Over Yes Men, Cynics, Hedgers, and Other Corporate Killjoys. Matt, thank you for joining us and welcome to Inside Wealth.
It's a pleasure, Stu. Pleasure to be here.
So, Matt, before we get into your successes at Shire and your insights in the book, how do you describe success? How do you define it?
Well, in the book, we basically have a young lady. She's the hero, and she's looking for success. And that success in the book is described as a room, and she's answering a want ad. And the whole metaphorical trip that she takes is about finding success, and the book is open to what that is, and you describe it yourself. To me, success is what makes you happy and gives you a sense of fulfillment, and that can be at any level, at any salary or income, and it can be at any stage of your life, and it can happen multiple times. So that's the way I would describe it.
Do you have a specific formula or recipe for your own success?
I do not. In fact, you might call me the accidental CEO. I mean, basically, I was always surprised when I got promoted. So that wasn't success. I think success to me was doing something that was greater than what I was currently in, and coming up with new ideas and trying to involve people and trying to, I think more importantly, get really smart people to communicate more with each other so that they had an effect on one another, that they learned from one another. And if you watched it in a room, it would look like an idea starting out and getting better versus what happens in a lot of big companies where an idea starts out and somebody says, you know, the problem with that is, that's my favorite opening phrase of corporate America, is the problem with that is. That's very telling of an internally focused organization and one that squashes new ideas, risk-taking, creativity, and ultimately the human spirit.
Mm. And I think we all know that the bottom line here is that innovation is more than ever, especially in this competitive world that we live in, is going to be the key to who's going to survive here.
I agree with that, and I think innovation in some ways becomes more difficult in the world because more and more things have been invented, but in another way, there's more and more things to draw from, and if innovation can be just allowed in corporations, I think amazing things would happen. I think structurally they work against it. In the book, we talk a lot about a structure that's put in place that's no longer relevant. In fact, it starts out with an Italian author, Calvino, talking about walking upon a building that's on stilts, but it's in the middle of the desert. Obviously, at one time there was an ocean there, and the building was built for a different purpose.
So what did inspire this book, Zenobia? Why did you write it?
Well, Zenobia was my co-author, Beth Kephart, and I sat down one day, and, you know, she kind of reminiscing. We had been working together. She as an author and a constructor of many of our internal communication organs, and she's done annual reports as well as her own novels. And she said, you know, you ought to write a book. And I said, no, you write books. I said, I've done business for 35 years, and we chatted about it, and she said, well, I'll write the book if you help with the ideas. And we sat down and talked about it, and she came up with some amazing, metaphorical connections, having known me and just took some of my ideas and I think brought them to life.
We're going to go to a break shortly, but just before we do, can you explain why the fable format? I must tell you, it was highly effective, and it had this whole Alice in Wonderland kind of imagery surrounding it, but why the fable?
Well, I think that there's been enough 10 Steps books written in the world to satisfy us for probably the next 300 years. And I think to be so precise, step one is step two, step three, is rather arrogant. I think that if you put it in fable form and let somebody interpret it as they would a painting or a sculpture, basically in terms of their view of the world and their situation, I think it's much more valuable. I think a fable allows people to talk about something. You know, well, what did you think about step one when he said that, establish your goals? I mean, there's nothing to talk about there. But if you say, what do you think why is this heroine that we have in this book dressed in red shoes and striped socks, and why is she different than everybody else in the book? You get the idea that we're having somebody see and feel what it's like to be different.
We're here with Matt Emmons. In fact, stay tuned for more. We will get business lessons from Zenobia and the CEO of Shire Pharmaceuticals, Matt Emmons, right here on Inside Wealth. We'll have more Inside Wealth right here on Talk Radio 910 AM, KNEW, San Francisco. You have a business, a mission, and a message. Inside Wealth can deliver that message to an intelligent, insightful, and mindful audience. Being a sponsor on Inside Wealth, you become an important player in a win-win agreement where nobody has to lose. Invest in your business and your purpose by calling 707-425-2360 or go to InsideWealth.net and sponsor radio that makes a difference. Inside Wealth, the greatest show on earth.
Imagine, you're lying in your bed stranded because you can't walk. Your friends and family go about their day, but you're left behind. You can't move without dragging your lifeless legs across the ground, stumbling every step, struggling to carry the entire weight of your body on two arms. This is reality for more than 100 million children and adults worldwide. They simply can't afford the one thing that will change everything, a wheelchair. We're the Wheelchair Foundation. We deliver hope, mobility, and freedom to impoverished people across the globe. And now you can be part of this great mission. A small gift from you can buy a brand new wheelchair and set a suffering person free. You won't believe how little it takes. Transform a life instantly. To make a donation or to find out how you can help, call the Wheelchair Foundation.
Call toll free. 888-378-3839. 888-378-3839.
Are you looking to help give back to the community but need great flexibility? Tony La Russa's Animal Rescue Foundation, ARF, has a flexible volunteer position tailored just for you. You can share in the triumph of helping an orphan kitten or puppy, as well as receive unconditional love. ARF needs volunteer fosters to provide a little extra time or attention until these animals can be adopted into their forever homes. ARF will provide the food, medication, and support, and you provide the love. Check out ARF.net or call 925-256-1ARF today. Please give puppies and kittens another chance.
Hey, Pete.
Oh, hi, Bob.
Pete, I've been meaning to ask you something.
Sure, neighbor.
Why is it this year your lawn looks so much better than mine? They've always looked pretty much the same, but now yours is thicker, greener, no weeds. This could be embarrassing.
I was going to mention that.
Yeah, but no, really. How'd you do it?
Well, simple. I called Scott's Lawn Service. They stopped by, did a free analysis of my lawn, and left me a no-obligation price quote. And now, with Scott's products supplied by Scott's professionals, my lawn really looks great. Scott's even guarantees my satisfaction.
Professional lawn care service from Scott's.
Call them, neighbor.
With Scott's Lawn Service, you'll never face lawn problems alone again. So get a thicker, greener lawn you can be proud of. Call Scott's Lawn Service for your free personalized lawn analysis and price quote. Scott's Lawn Service is guaranteed, and there's no obligation.
Call 800-481-2300. That's 800-481-2300 for Scott's Lawn Service.
We have more Inside Wealth and Out right here on Talk 910 AM, KNEW, San Francisco. We are here with Matt Emmons, CEO of Shire Pharmaceuticals and co-author with Beth Kephart of Zenobia, The Curious Book of Business, a tale of triumph over yes men, cynics, hedgers, and other corporate killjoys. And last segment, we finished off talking about how the protagonist in the book is going through this maze and how different she is. And there are so many lessons in this book, Matt. One has to do with taking risks. How do you, and you mentioned that last time, last segment also in terms of, the problem with that is, many people in corporations start sentences with like that as an indication of their unwillingness to take risk.
Or to compete with somebody else. they want to compete with them, yeah.
Right, and obviously sometimes people just find it easier to poke holes and find ways to say no rather than ways to say yes.
But absolutely.
So in general, how do you learn, or can you learn, to become a risk taker?
Well, I think companies have sure tried that, and I think fairly unsuccessfully if you look at history. I'm certain I've been doing this for 35 years, and I've been in three or four different companies, and I've certainly talked to a lot of people about it and been a guest speaker here and there. But, making a T-shirt and saying I'm an entrepreneur one of my favorite lines is, let's take prudent risks. Well, prudent is who sees it is a question that's interesting. But basically what we try to do in Zenobia is take the viewpoint of an individual, in this case a young woman, to make her as different as possible. We dressed her up kind of funny, and these are all metaphorical clues to somebody that's going to act differently. If you act the same inside a company, nothing really is going to change, and you're not going to have an impact, and we won't reach our mythical room 133A in the book, and that's the ultimate goal of fulfillment. So what we thought about is, what does it feel like to be different, to have an idea, and people ridicule you. What is it? What are you looking at? You're looking at things that no longer work, things that really a company, an organization, or any size needs to move on, that the organization itself prevents from happening. So as you do that, you are challenging certain tenets, some of which are established by people you work for, and you may be crossing organizational boundaries, and you may put yourself at personal risk. What does that feel like? What does that look like? Can you get used to that, and can you ultimately accept the fact that your beliefs may cause you not to work there anymore, if you take it to the extreme? And that's a liberating moment. If I can tell you, I had one in my career in which I finally said, no, I believe I'm right, and I'm going to leave. And, then they were falling all over themselves me to stay. But that was a liberating moment, because I learned that you have to really push it to the edge to make a change and to make a difference. And through the eyes of this young lady, Maura, she sees an organization that's ill, old, misconnected. She sees representations of people that stop new ideas. She sees somebody walking down the hall with a machine of the here and now, we call it, but basically here's what you're going to do today. And then there's people in another room doing PowerPoints, and they're all looking backwards. Looking forward is a very scary thing to a lot of people, and a lot of times when new ideas come, nobody wants to hitch their kite to that, because if it fails, somebody, they're going to get blamed, but if it's successful, they might not get the accolade. So it's a very good look through this woman's eyes as she responds to this ad and tries to find this gentleman to interview at the top floor. She sees all these kind of wild people, but they're representative of what really can happen. Companies that squash ideas, tell you you're no good, make you feel inferior, try to put you in a box, etc., from change. Change is very threatening.
So if we can ground it a little bit, let's say some of our listeners who are actually gainfully employed at a company that may sound like one of these companies, where there's a lot of structure in place. On one hand, yes, we all know that innovation is important. On the other hand, there is, there are kind of rigid boundaries. And in many cases, as you pointed out, if you invite change, you may be bearing all the risk and not even get the credit if it works, because the superior may do that one for you. And so what do you say to somebody and who may be listening right now, actually, and to encourage them to as you had done in your career, take that stand? And that is scary for people, because they may lose their job over it, conceivably. You don't know.
Yeah, well, I think that there's a situation where you can let a company define your boundaries and your goals and how you act. And I think that's not what you're paid for, especially as you get in managerial positions. But when you take the responsibility to act to your heart and say, I know this is the right thing, I think that's what this book's about. It's really an internal look at what I need to do, what I really believe. If you're at odds with those two things of what is expected and what you believe, you're not going to be a happy employee. You're not going to achieve what you expect in your life. And in fact, you may get fired anyway, because they don't think you add anything. It's kind of a double-edged sword. So what Zenobia talks about is a company that's way out of date. It's basically building buggy whips, and there's no demand anymore. it's not really doing that. You have to read the book to find out. But it's another metaphor. But it's somebody walking in there and seeing it for what it is and not taking no for an answer. When you talk about yield nothing to those that can't get past themselves, basically it talks about the guy that comes for the interview that's trying to impress what is, and she comes trying to make what can be of the company, and it is ultimately recognized. And it's a fable, so it has a happy ending, and looks into the future in a very bright way. But I think a lot of the things that happened to this young lady along the way caused people to think about, am I being molded by what I'm in, or am I here to mold what it can be in a world that's changing? I mean, basically, companies, the minute they're set up, or organization structures or whatever, the next day, outdated. They were done for yesterday. And when you get massive, large organizations, it can take, they can be out of date 10 years, 15, 20 years in their model. And people still, with an internal focus, will cause that model to be very hard to move.
We are here with Matt Emmons, who not only is an author of Zenobia, he's also a practicing CEO at Shire Pharmaceuticals, a company that's done very well. It's a $10 billion market cap type company. So please listen, because this man is walking talk in a big way. Matt, something else came to mind as you were talking, and that is implicit in what you're saying is, life is kind of short, or can be. And it's so easy for us to settle for what we, our horizons as dictated by what we think business as usual is, or conforming to what we're being told to do. And what you are encouraging and empowering people to do is to not take no for an answer, and to follow what they know in their heart to be true, which hopefully could be in the best interest of the organization as well, not just being self-centered.
I believe it usually is, if it's allowed to come out, and if people take on one person's idea and build on it with another group of people, it usually gets stronger inside of a company.
You talked about looking not just for what could be, looking at what could be, and not just what is.
Yep.
Why don't you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Yeah, I think that all wealth and all company profits, which are ultimately somebody's wealth, hopefully shareholders or owners, comes from an idea. If you think about it, it really comes from software. The company and the organizational structure and how we have meetings and all the things we do every day are basically hardware. I mean, that's set up and that's done. But if you think about where money generates, it's a new idea. It's Jobs with the iPod. It's the original idea of the PC. It's cell phones. It's GPS navigation in your car. It's all these. Somebody had this idea. And when they had this idea, I'm sure that somebody looked at them and said, you are out of your mind, because it does not yet exist. And therefore, it can be either a fantasy, or these people can be perceived as delusional. There's been talk of the mass hallucination, the ability of certain leaders to create something that's not real into something that people can touch is the magic, because almost anything's possible if people really believe in it and you put enough capital into it, you can probably make it happen. But there's an innate resistance in large organizations to that kind of change, because it threatens what has made other people successful, and it threatens that hardware, that architecture that's been put in place that's comforting for many. And they don't want that to blow up. Somehow there seems to be less risk of that if that gets old and outdated than if you come in with a totally new idea, which I think is exactly backwards. There's probably more risk just sitting there and not changing.
Well, there are a lot of structures in place in our world today, not just in corporate structure, that also has power bases that are threatened. If they were truly to let go and allow for change and presence to pour forth, politically or even in religious structures, right?
Yes, and I would say just in the financing structure, it's interesting to me to watch really breakthrough ideas that have become world-changing, the PC, the things I just named, but I can think of many, many inventions over the years that have done this, are not readily recognized early except by a few really high-risk venture capitalists. But the markets don't recognize them initially. They follow it. And that's another kind of weight that you drag along. It's their world, and they know what they're doing there, but they don't understand fundamentally your business or what your vision is until it does create value, and then they can, you can make a model out of that, and you can make a line going in a certain direction at a certain slope, and all of a sudden it makes sense.
Sure. Well, there are all kinds of people out there. In fact, I understand that one of the major VCs out there uses as their criterion for investing a glimmer of greatness. if they can see a glimmer of greatness in the idea, not necessarily the business model, models can change, but in the idea and the concept of the service or product to be provided, if there's this opportunity of ubiquity, internationalization, globalization, they may very well bet on the horse. So that's it's kind of confirming what you're talking about.
The kind of people I love.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, financially, it's kind of interesting within a company, just as outside. Companies spend a lot of energy measuring what has been, and I think very little energy in trying, they're going to do, you know, we do long-range planning and we do strategic planning, but basically, what are the ideas, the fundamental idea that's going to be different for the future, especially when you're in an environment that's changing? Our world is, you know, it just keeps going faster and faster.
Sure.
You know, you've got to be ahead of it. And I don't think companies spend enough time thinking about that and honoring unique ideas. I, as one that has had some unique ideas over the years, I can treat it as it's usually a threat or a yawn. either way, it's probably not going anywhere because it's not understood.
So Matt, at Shire, how do you instill a culture that allows for these new ideas to be generated and you know, encouraged?
Well, as you know, the pharmaceutical business is under pretty tough times. If you look at both market caps, which is driven by their pipelines and their potential for growth, and a feeling politically that there's going to be much more pressure on pricing and things. So the industry is not in great shape. One of the reasons I went to a small company like Shire, when I started 5 years ago, we've tripled the market cap. We're now over $10 billion. But we went to an area that we thought was underutilized, and we looked at the world a little differently. We said, let's try to get low-risk development, long patents, in areas that are not billion-dollar products, but maybe half-billion-dollar products. And that's not enough to move the needle of the big guys.
Sure.
So it was kind of a niche in the middle. And we chose two things. One is products that generally had proven mechanisms of action or had been used in another indication. And secondly, we chose areas that people might not think we want to go into, like orphan drugs. We had a slogan inside the company called, the overall thing is brave, but basically fearless. We want a fearless culture. And we kind of relate pharmaceuticals a bit like wildcat oil well drilling. And we want to be a step up the ladder from that, where we're not, at least we kind of know where it is, where we're digging the holes, not where we're going just to a blank field. But still, it's a pretty risky business, and people have to make decisions every day, and we wanted people to all participate in those decisions and be able to speak freely about them. So we've done now two huge deals for us, multi-billion-dollar deals, one almost three, one almost two, and we bought some companies, and I got to tell you, the market had to follow us into that. The first one we did, we went down 15-20% in market cap over a two-week period, and the market kind of got it. We came back even, and ultimately, 6 months later, that pushed us to our first doubling of the stock. So, again, if it was widely recognized externally as the next thing you're going to do, you know, in the context of the way they saw it, A, it would be too expensive for us, and they would, or B, they would have expected it and it would already been in the stock. So it's kind of interesting to see that kind of reaction. It lets you know that you did something they didn't expect. And I think you have to do the unexpected in business. If you do the expected, you're going to be mediocre.
I hear you loud and clear. In fact, we're just about winding up our segment, which is going so fast, Matt. But, you know, I wanted to follow up with you on the notion of fearlessness.
Yep.
Because so many of us live in some aspect of fear.
Yep.
And you mentioned actually in the book this piece of sage advice. Sometimes fear is a choice you can choose not to make.
Yeah, I've been looked at fear a lot in my life in terms of the work environment. And I think most fear is unrealistic fear. Many people think if they do something wrong or different, they're going to get they're going to die. I think they act like they're going to die. What's the worst you can do? You might get fired. You know, you were looking for a job when you got the one you have. That's not so bad. You're going to live through that. If you look at great entrepreneurs, most of them have failed at least three times before they're successful because they got over that fear of failure. What's real failure? I think if you die or if your family's hurt or injured or if you develop some chronic disease that's gradually going to take your mind away, maybe that's fear. I don't think business has the number of things that can scare you as much as everybody thinks it can.
Matt Emmons, thank you so much for joining us. Everybody, come to our website at insidewealth.net. We'll have a link to Matt and this book, wonderful book, Zenobia. Matt, thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
We have more Wealth to Share right here on KNEW, 910 AM, San Francisco. Will, ownership, trust, appreciation, they all work in the financial world. And they are all keys to security and wealth beyond measure. And it's all in our book, Inner Security and Infinite Wealth, subtitled Merging Self-Worth and Net Worth. Hey there, it's me, Stu Zimmerman. Come to our website at insidewealth.net. That's insidewealth.net and order your copy today. That's insidewealth.net. I'm Stu Zimmerman, creator of Inside Wealth. Welcome to the movement that takes your wealth to the next level. Beyond the surface of money to the service of money, where you get provocative commentary and lively conversation about inside wealth, right here on Talk 910 KNEW. And now it's time for our Brain Trust segment. And with us today is a very valued member of our Brain Trust. Of course, they all are. But Kevin Grauman, who, one, he's a deep, close, personal friend. Two, an incredible entrepreneur who led a company to be the fastest growing company by Inc. magazine, Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year. He's founded, built, and sold multiple businesses. And he's got one coming up. It's going to be the next greatest thing in human resource software. I'm not going to tell you what it is right now until we're ready for prime time there. But we're very much ready for Kevin Grauman right here. Kevin, welcome back to Inside Wealth.
Hi, Stu.
Hi there. So you were our ambassador, eyes and ears at this TED conference, the Technology, Entertainment, and Design Conference, with the who's who of corporate and entertainment internationally, frankly. Some of the brilliant minds of the world were all there. And what went on there?
Well, I was a virgin this year. It was my first attempt at participating, and to my brain still hurts, actually. It's one of the most remarkable experiences I've ever had.
Were they rough with you?
No, in all seriousness, it was a gathering of individuals who the sole purpose of which is to learn and be educated. And while a lot of the presenters at the show, there were probably about 50 or 60 of those presenters, each one had a significant topic to share, but very eclectic mix of focus. And, at the end of the day, which was from about 7 a.m. in the morning till 11:30 at night, nonstop, it was remarkable. So, I don't even know where to begin, but I can tell you a couple of snippets that were take-homes for me.
Yeah, please.
Interestingly, the presenters had one of two focuses, either a small idea becoming very big or a large idea becoming absolutely massive. And I'll tell you what I mean. A small idea becoming big, a gentleman called Dave Eggers, who began in San Francisco and is now national, developing and deploying these mentoring facilities for kids in underprivileged societies that are after school. And these are one-on-one tutoring, mentoring environments where the kids are safe and very impactful on them. Well, it's been such a success that I think he's up to about 15 or 16 of these things nationally, each one in a different city. But small ideas started really at the back of a coffee shop and became this huge entity in terms of impact. And the other one was a guy who I'd never heard of, Dr. Neil Turok, T-U-R-O-K. He's a physicist out of Cambridge who grew up in Africa. And because of his influence in the mathematics and physics world, he decided that the only way for Africa to kind of elevate itself up into the world arena would be to get with it on the education side. So he started an institute down in Cape Town in South Africa called the African Institute of Mathematical Sciences. And the idea was to find thirst for mathematical and physical interest and to teach them at a very advanced level. Well, fast forward about 5 years, and they're producing one of the best groups of physics students, and these are honors masters and PhDs in mathematics and physics in the world. And his idea, which started small, is to really propagate this whole thing throughout Africa. So that was literally, in total time, that was probably a half an hour